Thank you for listening to the If You Market podcast. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy. Carla Jo Helms is here with us.
Hello, hello.
And today we'll be talking about managing remote workers with Lisette Sutherland. Lisette is the director of Collaboration Superpowers. That's a company that helps people work together from anywhere through online and in-person workshops. She also produces a weekly podcast featuring interviews with remote working experts, highlighting the challenges and successes of working with virtual teams. Lisette, thrilled to have you on today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So this is a really unique subject for us. We usually talk more about kind of hardcore marketing type stuff, but remote workers, I think, is a really interesting area. A lot of marketing teams have remote workers, or there's a lot of companies nowadays that are fully remote. So we're really excited to get talking to you about this. First, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your company's or your company Collaboration Superpowers?
Sure. So my name is Lisette, of course, and I'm an American living in the Netherlands for the last 10 years.
Wait. Are you living in the Netherlands just to practice remote working, or is that where the company is located?
No, I live, I am the company. I'm sort of a solopreneur, and I have a franchise model. So I have other facilitators who pay me a license fee in order to be able to give the workshop that I developed. So it's sort of one and the same.
I thought maybe your company sent you like to Siberia just to practice their remote working techniques.
Well, you know, you're not so far off, because the reason I'm here was because I was living in Los Angeles 10 years ago, and I was working for a company that built an online project management tool. And because we were using an online project management tool and everybody was, you know, eating our own dog food, shall we say, we could work from anywhere. And I sort of had this realization one day of like, what am I doing in Los Angeles? And so I decided to venture out and see where I'd end up. And I ended up in the Netherlands.
That's awesome. I did that years ago when I was doing sales. I worked remotely, went all over Europe. It was amazing when you realize, wait, I can be anywhere. Why am I not in Costa Rica on a beach right now?
Exactly.
Most remote workers, are they working somewhere for that reason, or is it more of my commute's long, some days I'll work from home type of thing?
You know, there is a small subset of people that are digital nomads. So those are people who are traveling the world and working as they travel. So they're sort of working to pay for expenses along the way. But by and large, most people just want a little bit of freedom, and either freedom from the commute or just freedom to work flexible hours, freedom to train for triathlons. And when I talk to people, a lot of people prefer, by and large, sort of a hybrid model of working where they spend some time in the office and some time working somewhere else, sort of depending on the task or the mood or what they have going on in their lives.
So it's not like they're in the Netherlands and their rest of their work staff is in Los Angeles. It's, you know, they're in Los Angeles, but they spend a couple of days working at home.
That's correct. Yeah, that's by and large. Most people really prefer that. They like the contact of being in the office. But really what people want is they want to work where they're most productive. And sometimes that's at the office with other people. And sometimes that's at home or from a co-working space or, you know, a beach. Some people, you know, like to work from a beach. Although it sounds way more glamorous than it is, because working from a beach, you've got the sun and the laptop screen and you've got, you know, sand. That's not really, it's not that great. Yeah.
It's not that easy.
In the pictures.
Everybody thinks that's what we're doing. I remember when I traveled, the idea was, oh yeah, you'd just be bouncing around and working in. What we found out was, no, you have to have a hotel room or an apartment or something. You'd sit down at a table and focus and work. Otherwise, you're not just sitting on the bench at the Louvre and doing your work. It doesn't work that way.
Right, right. And it also depends on the kind of work. Like, for instance, I have maybe 5 or 6 video calls per day. So I can't just be sitting in a public space having, you know, professional calls with people. I really need to be in a place where I can, most of the time it needs to be a place where it's quiet and where I don't have a lot of background noise and where I can focus on the people that I'm talking to.
Right. So sorry, I jumped in and cut you off. You were getting into kind of what the company does and what you do in general.
So Collaboration Superpowers, we help people and companies work better together remotely. And we do that through in-person or online workshops. And so I really recommend when people take the workshop that I've developed called the Work Together Anywhere Workshop that they do it online, because, you know, if you want to learn how to work remotely, it's best to do it remotely. But it's still sort of a new thing, and people don't believe that online workshops can be engaging or interactive or possible even. So I and my facilitators get flown all over the world to give remote working workshops in person.
Interesting. So in person, is that out of convenience versus doing it remotely?
I think it's just out of, they think it's going to be a webinar or it's going to be some sort of an on-demand video series, and they don't trust that it's going to be as powerful or as good as it is in person. So now Right. What I've done is, if people insist that I need to be there in person, well, for one, I charge more because, you know, it costs a lot more time and energy to go somewhere. But then I also promote a hybrid version of the workshop. So we do a half day in person, and then we do two online sessions. So you actually get a chance to experience what a virtual office feels like, what it's like to teleport to another place. You know, you can sort of get in and push the buttons and see what it's like and how to behave online.
Yeah. And I guess it seems like, hey, if you're pitching these people and training them on remote working, but you're doing it in person, it seems odd at first, but then you realize, oh, if they're not sold on remote working yet, to do that remotely, like, you kind of need to come in person and sell them on the next step versus trying to remotely sell them on remote might be a bit of a step too far. I mean, do you feign insult ever when they say they need you to come in person, or just charge them to come?
No, I just charge more and I go in person because I really love traveling and I love seeing new places. So I get to go to all kinds of exotic locations every year. So that's it works out for me.
I would imagine that they wouldn't have a problem paying for it. I mean, you know, remote workforce for people that aren't remote work, right? It's virtual and it's not very real to them. I think sometimes the virtual world is less real to others because there's not things that you can see and touch, right? So it seems almost counterintuitive to have an in-person workshop on a remote workforce, but I can totally see how that would make them more comfortable.
For sure. And also, you know, the thing is, people don't realize how far we've come with technology in the last 5 years. So many people are still using the old conference room spider phones, or worse, Skype for Business, which seems to be prevalent in every company and is just the worst online video conferencing tool. And people don't realize that, you know, virtual reality is here and lots of remote teams are experimenting with that. Holograms are right around the corner. You know, technology has come a long way, and it's time for people to throw out the old spider phones and Skype for Business and check out what's on the market now.
Oh my gosh, you're busting me. We have 50% remote workforce and we use Skype for Business. And I want to know,
you're not alone,
what is better. That is such a good point. You know, we have lots of clients and companies that are remote and they use Skype for Business, and we always have problems. But, you know, I think sometimes you keep doing the same thing, expecting different results. I don't even think HR has looked into another tool. Isn't that odd? That's odd.
You're not alone. I would say 70% of the people that I do workshops for and the companies I do workshops for are using Skype for Business because it comes included in Microsoft Office.
Totally.
And so everybody gets Microsoft Teams, Microsoft Office, and then you have Skype for Business. And why would you buy yet another tool if you've already got
something? Well, what do you recommend? That's like the number one thing I want to know.
There are a couple of tools. I mean, almost anything will be better than Skype for Business. And I'm not just saying that. I'm really a hater because it inhibits communication on so many teams. And then they blame remote working. And the tools that are better, the one that I love the most is Zoom, zoom.us. And there's another one called BlueJeans. But, you know, even even Hangouts Meet or Appearin or some of these, some of the other ones are also better. But Zoom and BlueJeans, if you use either of those tools, you'll never go back. I'll say that. You'll never go back.
Which is your favorite?
Zoom, by far.
I'm really happy to hear that because we're getting ready to swap over to Zoom, I think, for this podcast real soon. We evaluated a bunch of conference technologies and things for this type of a thing, and we found Zoom, although not designed for podcast recording, we're basically having a remote session here together, and we found Zoom to be the best solution for us out there.
And why do you both think Zoom is the best solution? I mean, I know our listeners are going to be asking that as well.
So one of the reasons that Skype for Business is so bad is it because it will, the person who has the lowest quality bandwidth on the call affects everybody else on the call. And with Zoom, everybody has a separate line. So if one person has low bandwidth, it doesn't affect anybody else on the call.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there's some other technical magic in there that I'm not exactly sure why, but what I know is when I have calls with people, for instance, in Germany or in Eastern Germany, Skype for Business won't work and Zoom will with very high quality. You can have up to 50 people on the call at the same time, 50, and it has got a great mobile version. So, and the price is great. I think it's $15 per month, and they have a free version, and the free version only cuts you off after 45 minutes, which most people think is a feature rather than like a limitation.
Right. You don't want a meeting going longer than that anyway, usually.
Exactly.
You should have to pay extra to be cut off at 45 minutes. It sounds like we just did it. Well, we just did a mini commercial for Zoom, but that's what they get for having a good product. Yeah.
That's true.
Wow. Well, you know, that's probably a number. I don't know if it's number one, but number two, but I bet they want to know what tools do they need to use to communicate, measure, and run a remote workforce. I bet that's one of the biggest questions.
Yeah. So Lisette, you mentioned BlueJeans and we talked about Zoom a little bit. Are there any other technologies that are really useful for remote? I mean, I'm sure there are, but can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, there's tons. Actually, on my website, I have a tools page that lists about 400 or 500 different tools that remote teams are using, and they're all categorized. So you don't have to like scroll through tons of tools. But, you know, I would say sort of the minimum that you want to have is a great video conferencing tool, and you want to turn on the videos. That's a big thing. And then you want to have some sort of a group chat tool. So that can be Stride or Slack is probably the most popular one, but you know, Salesforce has one. There's a bunch of them out there. And then other things that you would want, I guess, is task tracking, which most people have, but also some way of brainstorming. So an online sticky note board or a whiteboard that you can draw on sort of as virtual teams and get together and visualize what you're talking about. But that at a minimum is pretty much, you know, after that, it all gets fancy. There are a lot of teams that use virtual offices. So my favorite tool for that is called Sococo, S-O-C-O-C-O. And it's basically just like what it sounds like. It's an office that you go to online. And when you arrive there, you are looking down into a virtual floor plan with a number of different offices, and you can see where everybody is on the virtual floor plan, but you can only hear and see the people that are in the same office as you. So you can see where everybody is, and if you want to go to another office, you just double click, and then you're in the other office. So those kind of tools are really great for creating presence on a team. So you don't have to call somebody and say like, hey, you know, Sky, can you talk next week at 2? Instead, you can just knock on somebody's virtual door.
So it's like a Sim Life business edition.
Exactly. But far easier to use than Sim was.
So you mentioned all the technologies. We'll put those on the show notes for this episode, or we'll put a link to your website, if you don't mind, for all the different tools that people use. It sounds like you'd made a reference to what's coming in holograms and stuff like that. Are we going to see at some point, or is there any purpose to the stuff you see in movies where nobody's in the room, but there's a bunch of holograms looking at each other?
It is really right around the corner. I mean, in fact, in 2012 at Coachella, they made a hologram of Tupac, and Tupac and Snoop Dogg played together. Snoop Dogg was there in the flesh and Tupac was there as a hologram. So the hologram technology has been there for quite a long time. It just takes significant bandwidth and it's pretty expensive. But now with new technology, they've got 3D cameras that are coming out. And yeah, I mean, soon I'm thinking within the next year or two, you'll be able to beam into a conference anywhere in the world and actually speak as a hologram on stage.
Wow.
Hologram if there's other live people there, but what about augmented reality or virtual reality, just putting on glasses to be in a room and everybody else is there type of a thing?
Yeah, that is already happening. I think most people are just really intimidated by virtual reality technology. because it has been hard to use. I mean, Second Life has been around for, I don't know, more than 20 years now, and they have tons of people using it, all kinds of university. I mean, you can take classes in Second Life. The military uses it for simulations. Tons of people are, you know, meeting there and hanging out together, but it is pretty hard to move your avatar around and to find your way around. And so, you know, most, I would say normal people aren't really, you know, normal people are still sitting around the conference room table with spider phones. They're not exploring virtual reality, because in order for these tools to be.
What are spider phones?
You know, that's the conference room phones that sat, they're like these speakers that sit in the middle.
Oh yeah. I haven't seen one of those in forever. I didn't know they were called spider phones.
Yeah. I don't know what, I don't know what other name they might be called.
Is that the one that looks like the world's most boring throwing star or something like that?
Exactly. That's the one.
It looks like a really old, joystick with the missing stick, right? Exactly.
So we really, really want person-to-person interaction so bad that rather than being on a conference, like just seeing the people on our screen through the camera on the computer is nice and all, but we want like three-dimensional holograms of people to be looking at to communicate that bad.
It's surprising how powerful presence is. I mean, they have they have these telepresence robots that basically you beam in just like you would beam in on Skype, you know, call in on Skype. But the difference is they have these little robots that sit on the table where you can now turn yourself from side to side just using the arrow keys on your keyboard, or you can nod your head up and down or left and right. And those aren't even the drivable ones, but they have these telepresence robot, and that movement alone gives somebody so much presence in a room. It really humanizes the person. So yeah, video conferencing is great, but creating presence is extremely powerful. And for some reason, as humans, sight is extremely important, and to feel present with other in the room. Yeah. I mean, the more powerful we can make it, I think the better collaboration we'll have.
I think maybe we feel if we can't shake our head and roll our eyes at somebody, then it's not quite a meeting.
Right. Right.
You know, or joke or laugh. It's like, you know, there is something about the tangible presence of someone, right?
One of the reasons that I want to start using Zoom, and I started looking into this, is I realized this is great the way we've been doing the podcast for this long, but I need the video part just to be able to see the other people that I'm talking with. I realize it adds a whole nother dimension. We had a co-host that was in office at one point, and it was so great to be able to see each other while we were talking, and the hand gestures and stuff like that. And you just lose a lot. Yeah. When you can't see somebody's, even just their face, when you can't see somebody talking, it's weird how much context somehow we get, how much you feel so much more comfortable when you can actually see people, I guess.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, if you can see that somebody wants to speak, or they're raising their hand even, or you can, you know, when you use video, you can all of a sudden use all kind of visuals. You know, you can hold up signs and cards and, you know, do hand gestures. And there's a whole set of hand signals that people have developed for online meetings. You know, they have one where you hold your hands up and sort of shake your hands back and forth. They call it jazz hands. And that's just to show that you're really agreeing.
You really
with
agree with it. You like
saying.
It. We do that.
That's exactly. Awesome.
Now, what is the biggest hurdle that companies have going remote? And what are the biggest hurdles they have once they actually do it?
So I'm going to guess number one, Skype for Business. After that.
You know, it is a huge problem. No, but I would say the number one hurdle that people have, especially managers have, is trust. They don't trust that people are going to do the work. There's sort of this fear that if I can't see you, then you're not going to be working. And what's really strange is that the opposite tends to be true, is that people want to work remotely because they want to be more productive. And that when they are working from home, or when you give them the flexibility, instead of laziness, most people suffer from burnout because they have a hard time turning off. Because, you know, we can work from anywhere and anytime, and so we tend to do that. And that's much more of a problem than laziness.
Interesting. So I have a whole series of questions about that, because when I hear remote workers, as somebody who has employees, when I hear remote workers, my first thought is, okay, like remote slacker. And then I remember reading the book 4-Hour Work Week. back in the day. And what I took away from the 4-hour work week was, oh, this guy has made a career out of
being a slacker,
kind of, well, conning companies kind of. And he wrote a book training people. Here's how to trick your company into paying you while you're working on something else. To let you first, here's how to, I mean, it was a step-by-step guide to how to get out of the office and work remotely. And then a little more and leverage this. And now how to do the bare minimum amount of work and they won't know it. And then now you can focus on something else and have basically your second job that they're fine. That's what the book was about. And I was just like, this is a step-by-step guide for how to con people. And remote working was a huge part of it. So that was kind of my feeling towards remote working was, yeah, this is what people do remote working for. And I know there's a ton of technologies out there around how to make sure remote workers are actually working. I've heard of one where they have to like hit a certain key on the keyboard every so many seconds. It's like the sentry checking in, otherwise there's something wrong kind of. And if they don't, then they're not working at that time. So I guess my feeling, and probably, yeah, like you said, a lot of companies feeling, is the distrust of, are my people actually working if they're working remotely?
Indeed. And there's a lot of ways to, I'm not a fan of monitoring. I know that there are some companies that do, like they monitor keystrokes or they take a picture of the screen every few seconds. And I'm not a fan of that because I just feel like the more you control, the less trust that can be built there. And I find that there's other ways to build that trust. And one of those ways that I really recommend with every team that I do is I say, one, first create a deliberate plan as a manager to facilitate success. So, set clear expectations and outline what are the results that are expected. So it's not like how much time you spent on that report, but what is expected of that report. And, what are the results that you're expecting? And then the other is create a team agreement together as a team, which outlines, what kind of information you're going to share, how you're going to communicate together, and how you're going to know what each other are doing. So that's where you can set expected response times. Are there core hours that you need to be on together? What are the tools that you're going to use to talk to each other? How are you going to give each other feedback? All of those things, if you just put that together in a team agreement, can go a long way to, one, alleviating misunderstandings on the team, which is really, really important to do. And then the other is, as a manager, then you know that you've set the expectations, that people know what's expected of them, and that everybody has a clear understanding.
You know why I love that? Because you're getting everyone's agreement. It reminds me of a private school that my friend's children went to, and they had all of the kids in every class come up with their own anti-bullying rules. And the kids had to come up with it. It wasn't put down by the school. They came up with their own agreement on other rules too. And the kids followed them, right? So I think of, this as you get a team agreement. They come up with it. It's not coming from management. Management endorses it. It's probably more likely to be followed, right?
Oh, for sure. And also it takes away from, some people are email people and some people are phone people. Some people like instant message. And it really takes away a lot of the misunderstandings about how to communicate together. And I think what you said was really important. It's not something that comes from the manager. It's something that the team sits down and has a conversation about and agrees on. And then when something goes awry and somebody's not following protocol, then you can just say like, hey, I thought we agreed. Like this was the behavior that we were going to establish on our team, like what's going on. So it's not finger pointing anymore. It's more like pointing towards the agreement and saying, I thought we had an understanding, like what's going on.
So brilliant. Is that what you do in your class and your online?
Yeah, that's the first module of the workshop is we actually create an agreement together for how we're going to behave in the workshop. Like, where are we going to store the files? How are we going to talk to each other? Do we use Google Drive or do we use Dropbox or do we use Slack or do you guys want to use emails? And sort of we just go through and build it for the duration of the workshop.
That is some real Jedi mind trick stuff. And it just kind of blew my mind a little bit to say, why am I not doing that overall more in my company?
Overall, really? I know, right?
Oh, yeah. When you have people create the solution themselves, they actually follow through with it. They own it. We've seen many people where they struggle. We give them more responsibility, make them the boss, and suddenly they're really good hard workers. They own it. That's awesome.
Yeah, and they'll write rules that make sense to them, right? They're not going to write rules that are restrictive or are going to work against them. They're going to write rules that make sense for the team that they're on. And you've hired professionals, so assuming that these are professionals, you know, with skills that you've hired, then I'd say for leaders, we've got to kind of go from command and control and instead set the goals as leaders, set the path and the direction, and then allow the professionals to have the autonomy to go there in the way that they see best.
Yeah, it really is getting people's agreement. Plus, you know, they kind of would look like a pariah if they said, no, I'm not in agreement. I don't want to do that, right? They've already said they wanted to do it for the best, you know, most effective communication. They would be hard pressed to go against it, right?
So you said, Lisa, you said that you're the monitoring of workers is something you're generally against. You feel that the slacker isn't really the archetype of the person that's looking to work remotely or works remotely. Those things all sound exactly like what the poster child for remote working would say, suspiciously. is there a situation where you think monitoring is necessary where a company, I know bosses are all paranoid that everybody's trying to steal work from them and whatnot, and we want everyone running in place when they're not doing something productive. But I'm sure there is a percentage of people that want to do remote working and they really want to just kind of work a couple hours a day and slack off and whatnot. How do you find and eliminate and identify those, and what do you do about them?
Well, so there are circumstances for monitoring where I've thought like, oh, okay, I can see that. And that's, you know, if a company is brand new to remote working or to having remote workers or outsourcing at all, it can help alleviate the manager's or leadership's fears. And so starting out with monitoring just to see, I can understand. I mean, if that's what's getting in the way of even trying it, trying outsourcing or trying any of it, then I would think like, okay, start with it and see how it goes. But people that tend to be over-controlled, it doesn't build an environment for trust.
Right. So it's typically like you'll throw it out there. You say, okay, if you really feel like you need that, then we'll do it just to make you feel comfortable type of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, as a last resort, if it's really the one thing that's in the way, but you know, there's going to be the George Costanzas in any business. So if you think they're going to be lazy at home, they're probably lazy at the office too. And they're figuring out some ways to work, to game the system. There's always going to be a couple people, but
always
calling them a George Costanza. Is that something that you came up with, or is that common industry jargon?
Oh no, I just, I assume that everybody knows Seinfeld and George is always the one. Right? Yeah. So I just assumed everybody knew Seinfeld.
I hadn't heard of it referred to that before. I love that. He just called somebody a George Costanza. He Costanza'd it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always think of when there's somebody trying to like, you know, build the alarm clock under their desk somewhere so that they can, yeah. But I would say if you go results oriented, it's actually a lot harder for people be lazy, because if you're results oriented instead of time oriented, then everybody's looking for, you need to produce the results. And if you have sufficient feedback loops in place, then it should be very clear to your team who's producing results and who's not.
You know, I was so embarrassed about Skype for Business, but I will tell you that I am not embarrassed that we do that. We measure people on production and their output. Managed by statistics, and they love it. But you know what? If they get their work done, you know, they're done. If they don't, they're not, but they're held accountable to their peers, and we don't really mark the time. It does work. It absolutely works.
Well, I find that it puts the motivation in a better place, because it's not like, okay, I have 8 hours to do this, or I have to do this marketing report and I've got 40 hours. Okay, so I've got to stay. If I'm working in the office, I'll stay sitting there for 40 hours just because I get paid for sitting there. But I mean, you kind of want the employee who can write the marketing report in 9 hours if possible, and then have other time for other work. Like, you want to motivate people to produce results and not on how long it's going to take them. You know, you want that person that's going to write it quicker.
Yeah.
That's just
interesting.
A better metric.
Yeah. Most bosses say, if you can finish it twice as fast, then I'll give you twice as much work.
Right. Right. Yep. So that's not a motivator.
Well, they should probably get bonuses based off of being, you know, their statistic being up or, you know, up stat, we kind of coin it. You know, that makes the producers really want to work hard.
Yep. Excellent. I want to take a quick break here, Lisette. Sorry to cut you off. If you could think about this for after the break, I'd be interested in knowing if you have any numbers on the percentage of companies that use remote workers, what the remote working kind of situation, how it's changed over the last handful of years, whatnot. So we're going to take a really quick break, and then we'll be right back with Lisette Sutherland of Collaboration Superpowers, talking about remote working.
Hey, this is Patrick McFadden, founder at Indispensable Marketing. If you're a professional service provider or a B2B business owner and you're struggling to attract your best clients and also charge a premium for your service, I think you should really check out our website at indispensablemarketing.com. You'll find some great resources there. And if you want to reach out, just click our free consultation button.
All right. Welcome back from the break. This is Sky Cassidy. I'm your host on the If You Market podcast. I've got our co-host, Carla Jo Helms, here with us.
Hi there.
And we are speaking with Lisette Sutherland of the Collaboration Superpowers Company about managing remote workers and basically everything remote workers. So Lisette, before the break, I'd mentioned any stats you might have, any information you might have on the growth, the popularity of remote working, that kind of stuff. Can you speak to that a little?
Well, I'll be very general and just say a lot of people are working remotely. I don't know. The stats are in the first chapter of the book. There's a lot of stats there on why people are working, or, you know, the percentages and who and how many. But really, suffice it to say that there's a lot of people doing it, and it's on the rise. And it's only going to be more and more on the rise as the technology increases and makes it more possible.
Right, right. So one thought I was having on it is, remote working seems to be really cool right now. Like the really cool companies, everybody wants to work here. We're such a cool company to work for. Places are all, I mean, there's 100% remote workforce companies. Carla Jo, you guys are super cool because I know you guys have a remote workforce.
Yeah, we are super cool.
Is there any chance this is a fad like the open office space that basically is getting pushed by Silicon Valley and they're saying, look how cool we are, it's an open office space, when really they just got a hangar to work out of because it was cheap and everybody wants to have a cubicle so they aren't constantly bothered by all the office noise? Or is this legit?
Okay. Well, I'm very biased, of course, so this is really hard to answer.
I thought that was a gotcha question. I was waiting for you to say, you go, it's a fad.
Oh God, no, I hope it's not a fad. I hope it's not a fad, because I think the reason why it's not a fad is, one, it offers people freedom. And I think that's really a powerful motivator. So just, you know, the freedom to avoid the commute, the freedom to care for your elderly parents or your children, or to train for a triathlon, or, you know, whatever it is. And for companies also, the freedom to hire people that are not necessarily in the same city. There's lots of software development companies out there that are needing other software developers, but they can't find them in the local region where their headquarters are. So they have to go and find people. Or, yeah. I mean, even the cost.
Right. It removes obstacles.
Exactly. Or the cost savings. I mean, a developer in San Francisco costs significantly more than a developer in Vietnam. And that's revenue companies can't ignore. So I don't think it's a fad. And especially when the technology, especially when Skype for Business goes out of business and the other, you know, we're using real technology, there's no reason that we should come to the office.
I am selling all my stock in Skype for Business now. I hope that's not an insider trading to hear that from you.
You know, employees or candidates for, you know, to be employees, they also recognize that there is a quality of life factor, and they're willing to take, you know, a bit lower salary for having remote working. You know, they're not spending the miles in their car. They're not spending the gas. They're not spending the time. You know, the mileage and so forth, and the time in the traffic. That's what I found as well. So you have people that are willing to, you know, work all around the U.S. or maybe even the country, that are in different areas where the cost of living is different.
Oh, yeah. And there's a recent Gallup poll, actually, where it said 60% of the people said that they would leave their current job if they could find another job that offered flexibility and even with a lower pay.
Yeah. Wow. That's a quite a stat.
So it is something that people really want.
It is a huge perk, the flexibility. Yeah. And the commuting. I mean, I live in LA, and when we're looking at people, we have a really hard time keeping people that are outside of a certain range. And I ask my people all the time, is that something? And they say, no, we can't ask that when hiring. We can't ask where they live. We can't ask. I said, there's got to be a line where we can ask. Like, can we ask if they live in the state?
Well, we get to know when they apply. I mean, how is it that they don't know? We get to know.
HR just says there's certain things you're not allowed to ask or take into consideration.
Well, it's probably certain states.
Consideration also. California is pretty rough with this stuff. I don't know. You can discriminate against somebody geographically. My point to them was, can we not hire them because they don't live in this state? It seems like, what about this country? There's got to be a geographic line where you're allowed to say, sorry, you're too far away. It doesn't work for the job. And in Los Angeles, that line is, you know, if you're more than 20 miles away, the commute's going to be too long and you're not going to last. You're going to go find another job eventually because commuting is just too much of a pain. It's not worth it. For certain positions, high level positions, people will commute a little bit more maybe, but it's just so difficult, like you're saying, Lisette, to get talent and to get the people you need sometimes because just of commute issues. So yeah, people can remote work, even part-time remote work. It opens up so many more people for you to hire. We were scared to death Amazon was going to come to LA because we were going to have to change our business plan. We wouldn't be able to hire anybody in so many positions anymore. So remote working, opening yourself up geographically to talent everywhere is a big deal.
Yeah, it's huge. They have this quote that I came across that says, a bad commute can ruin a great job.
Oh gosh, that's true, isn't it? Really is.
That needs to be a bumper sticker. Yeah.
In LA.
In LA, can you imagine being behind the car that has that on their bumper?
Well, you know, especially if you have horrible traffic, that's just...
Oh yeah, I just came back from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and the traffic there is incredible. It's nothing like, I mean, you'd think it's something similar to Los Angeles, but because their infrastructure is not so well built up, there you've got this old infrastructure and just millions of cars, and it is crazy. People commute, many people at the office that I was visiting there, many people commute 2 to 3 hours each way per day.
I was just picturing the traffic was terrible because there's constant parades and women with feathers coming off of them walking through the streets and stuff like that. You're saying it's real traffic. Oh, okay. Wow. Why is the traffic terrible? Oh, now it's another parade. Okay.
Give us some more statistics from that book of yours.
Statistics.
Oh, and also mention the book a little more. We haven't really talked about that at all. We'll have a note of it notes for this episode, of course, but can you tell us about the book in general?
Yeah, so what's called Work Together Anywhere, and it's a handbook on working remotely successfully for individuals, teams, and managers. And I wrote it from the three different perspectives because I felt that one, you know, individuals, if they're just starting to work remote, what is it that they need to know? You know, teams have another set of issues, and then managers have another set of issues. But instead of writing three separate books for each separate audience, my theory and my philosophy when writing this was, it makes us stronger to know the other's perspective. So if you're an individual and you're trying to figure out, you know, what is it that your manager is looking for in a remote worker, then you can just go to the management section and see what it is that managers are struggling with and what are they trying to do. And as managers, you know, if you're trying to understand, you know, how individual workers, you would go to the individual section. And so, you know, to be better informed about each other sort of helps us communicate. And so that's sort of the where the book was written from.
So people are getting three books for the price of one.
Oh yeah, and a huge resources section. I mean, a third of the book is just resources, tools, people, things, other books that you can read about it. So it's just sort of it really is a handbook, I would say. It didn't start this way, but it did end up this way.
And the introduction, I think, was written by Skype. Is that right?
One day Skype is going to come after me. If after this podcast airs, you never hear from me again, you know where to look. Just to police offers.
Now we know why you're in the Netherlands. Okay.
Exactly. You get far away from any Skype people. No, I was really honored. The foreword of the book was written by a guy named Jürgen Apollo, who is a management guru, and he's sort of been a mentor of mine for the last few years. He wrote a book called Management 3.0 and another book called Managing for Happiness. And I am the remote office manager on one of his teams that he started. So I felt like it's really easy to get up on stage or to write these books and then just to say, like, here's how you do it. And if you want to solve conflict on a remote team, well, here's the three things you should do. And I found that actually being a remote office manager keeps me very humble, because you have to deal with these personality conflicts and the weird things that come up. And it makes it just, I don't know, it just sort of instills in me a sense of humility when I'm on stage and presenting or giving workshops, and that, like, it sounds really easy and the steps for working remotely are pretty simple. Like, it's not rocket science. You know, I don't have to be super smart or anything to do any of this stuff, but you do have to do it.
Now, in the perks of remote working, do you ever list things like, you know how Steve at the office is always cooking eggs and broccoli in the microwave or burning popcorn and stuff like that? You don't have to deal with that. Is that one of the perks listed? Does that register up there? Like the person with the bad body hygiene, that kind of stuff?
Your lunch that keeps getting stolen by somebody there at the office. Yeah, all those office politics. Yeah, it does get a mention. It does get a mention. It's not a huge mention. But yeah, there are a lot of perks, though, because, you know, we don't get to choose our colleagues necessarily, but we spend a tremendous amount of time with them. And sometimes it's better to work with people at a distance. I mean, we get along with them even, you know, a little bit better if they're just sort of at arm's length. That's not always the case. I would say the best remote teams are the ones that really, they not only are professionals, but they enjoy working together and they actively seek each other out. There's something magic about that kind of a team.
Do you ever see a team where everybody raises their hand and just says, remote working sounds great, can we send this person remote?
Nobody's come forward yet, but I'm sure it exists.
You know, that's usually the person that doesn't get something done, and you really don't want that person that way.
Yeah, I'm sure it exists. Yeah. Clearly it's out there. Clearly it's out
there. Lisette, if you are the poster child for remote workforces, do you have a nemesis? Is there somebody on the other side? Is there another camp that's pushing hard to say remote working is a terrible idea and nobody should do it, that kind of thing?
Okay, I'm going to talk about people coming after me, and I'm only going to mention this.
I mean, not in a negative way. It's when you guys see each other at conventions, you don't have to go, get into a fight club or something like that.
Well, so there is an article that came out in May 2017, and it was by Patrick Lencioni, who, of course, is a famous author. And he wrote this article entitled, Remote Teams. I have to remember what the articles are. It basically said remote teams can't work. Like, don't do it. It's the truth is virtual teams can work, but they often don't, is his conclusion for that. And since he's such a famous author, you know, everybody pointed towards this article and said, aha, see? You know, Patrick Lencioni says you can't do it. And of course, IBM famously brought all people back to the office after having remote workers out there.
There was another tech giant that did that. Was it Yahoo?
Yahoo also did it. Yeah. And I understand. I mean, I have to say, you know, I'm not trying to argue whether remote is better than in person. For me, the far more interesting question is, if you have to be remote for one reason or another, and there's always, you know, the kids are sick at home, bad commute, you know, transportation problems, whatever it is, it's, you know, what do we do if we have to be remote? Then what? And that's, I think, a far more interesting question, because whether you like IBM and Yahoo, they both had very legitimate reasons for bringing their people back to the office. It was what their company needed at the time. And so
when they brought them back, but I bet you they still have remote workers.
Oh, for sure.
They don't have zero remote workers. They just had a massive force and they'd done a big push maybe, and they realized, oh, we just kind of did it to do it. Maybe we should pull this back a little.
Well, and also they would have lost a significant amount of their top talent if they didn't allow exceptions to that. Absolutely. But, you know, some businesses need to be in person for certain phases of their business. And some people, you know, at some point you can go remote. It really depends on the business. So my focus is more, if you have to be remote, then what do you do? Because I think that's just far more interesting. But I wish I could meet Patrick Lencioni. I mean, I respect him very much as an author. I just thought that that article was very damaging.
So you're saying he writes good, but his ideas are just bad.
Well, his idea on this, what his experience was, I would say he should have read my book first before coming to his conclusion.
But you know, people must not be listening to him anymore, because we have a large percentage of our population, our remote workforce, and it's growing and growing. So they're probably kind of, that statistic is debunking him as it goes along.
So now I would say, Lisette, have you read his book?
Yes, I have read it, but it's been a while. Of course I've read
okay.
his book. Yeah, his
so now books. I think you guys need to get into a Twitter fight and settle it.
Because
I was going to say, maybe, you know, he needs to read your book to understand your side. I feel frequently when people feel they're on different sides, really, they're actually close to each other. It's just the wording you use in the headline seems to create two separate camps, where remote working is bad, remote working is good, when probably he's saying there should be a lot less and you're saying there should be a lot more. And you guys might be a couple percentages away in how much remote working you think there should be.
Do you think that's the case with this?
I'm sure that we could have an intelligent discussion around the pros and cons and his experiences. I'm sure that something good would come of it.
Or a vicious Twitter fight would still be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. That would also be fun.
Anyway, thank you for letting us put you on the spot with that one. I'm sure you guys can still remain professional with each other when he comes to the, is there remote working conferences? Does that make
tons.
Any sense?
Yeah, there are tons. It's funny.
Are they remote?
Well, some are remote and some are not. There's there's one coming up in Bali soon. So they're picking these beautiful places. And I would say, you know, for conferencing and for networking, there are a number of different formats that people are trying. There's nothing that replaces being in person, you know, sharing a bowl of nachos and some beers together. There is nothing online at the moment that replaces that kind of experience.
Virtual nachos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting drunk at a conference in your living room is just depressing and sad.
It is. Yeah. There's something different to it. On the other hand, you know, I attended a conference in Las Vegas via robot. I was in my living room in the Netherlands, and my friend, Kristen, was from Vancouver, and she attended the same conference in a robot. And so we both were in Las Vegas via robot, and then she was in Canada and I was in the Netherlands, and it was great. We spent the whole day there. You know, we went to talks, we went to various booths, we had lunch together. You know, it was amazing, cool. Actually. So there's lots of different things we can do now.
You gave me an idea. I want to start a business now that's a remote bar, so people can sit on their couch in their house and still be at the bar drinking. They don't have to drink alone at home.
For over alcohol consumption, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You just have an entrance fee and you're good.
You don't have to arrange rides home for anybody. It's lots of benefits there, yeah. And we can all feel good about drinking alone.
Yeah, it's the biggest profit margin of any bar. So can you give, do you have any kind of initial tips that you give people that are considering or already have remote workers, some do's and don'ts type of stuff?
So I would say for the first part, one of the number one things is have awesome internet. And I know that it sounds like it goes without saying, but so many people don't have great internet. So if you've got employees and they want to work from home and they don't have a great internet connection, then it's a no-go. I mean, you really have to have good internet in order for it to work. Because gone are the days that when we say we're going to work from home and then, you know, we don't talk to anybody at the office, like a home day where you're just on your own at home alone and nobody bothers you. I mean, we can work from anywhere now, and there's no reason that we shouldn't be in contact. I always say it should be like Star Trek, you know, if they have the communicators and it's, you know, the captain can just be like, hey, Picard to Riker, and Riker from anywhere on the ship responds. And it should also be that way with our teams, no matter where they're working.
So you're a Picard guy, huh?
Yeah, or Janeway. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. Yeah. So having awesome internet, using great equipment, always use video whenever possible, because it's just so powerful for team building and, you know, creating empathy on a team. And then train your team. Like, you know, we all say like, oh, we think remote working is easy because we've got the, you know, images of working on the beach or working in our pajamas. But actually, there's a whole bunch of little things that people need to know, or it would just be good to, you know, it's good to know about in order to be a really high functioning remote team. So it's not meant to be a shameless plug for the workshop. I'm just saying, you know, we train our teams in all kinds of things, but nobody thinks to train for working from anywhere. But I think that's a really important component.
Right. I've got a quick story about remote working. I was working a long, long time ago. I had an apartment with roommates, and I was working from home sometimes, a lot of the time. And I was having troubles with the internet, and I didn't know why. And it turns out one of my roommates was a slacker, and he was a gamer, and he was doing like serious hardcore gaming on our internet connection. So my connection to work remotely, my connection to just to have calls, I had probably Vonage or one of those early VoIP connections. The sound was always bad. It couldn't figure it out.
Oh man!
This guy was gaming in the next room constantly, yeah, and just eating up all the bandwidth. So even if all you're doing is getting on the phone with clients and stuff like that, if you don't have a good internet connection, it can really wreak havoc.
Oh yeah, it just gets in the way of great communication. So, then also consider your background noise. I had a colleague once who had a bird cage next to her workstation, and it's super cute at first. And then, 15 minutes into the conversation, you're wondering how you can silence the bird.
That's
so
great.
It's, if you're calling in from coffee shops and the road, or from calling in from
the noise
car,
is just, yeah.
Yeah. And there's now a lot of great tools for that. I mean, they have noise canceling headsets, which are great. And there's a new app called crisp.ai, which actually takes the background noise out. You don't even need a noise canceling microphone. It's sort of an app that works in the background. It's amazing.
Wow.
You don't have to have a phone booth installed in your home.
Yeah, indeed. Although it is fun.
You have your own, in-home cone of silence to work out of.
Doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt to have that. That's for sure.
That's great. So any other specific do's and don'ts for people?
Okay. I would say definitely create regular feedback loops. You want to be checking in with people on a regular basis, because when you work remote, you have less... you just have less contact. When you walk around an office, you can see what people are doing, but when you're remote, you can't. And so feedback loops are super important. And part of that feedback loops, I would say, showing appreciation and celebrating success. It doesn't happen as often as one would expect, even in an office working in person, but online it tends to happen very, very little. And showing appreciation and sending gifts, there's actually tons of great stuff that we can do online. Like you can send a pizza almost anywhere in the world. So if you have a team that's burning the midnight hour somewhere, send them a pizza. It's super easy. Or you can send flowers, or renting a co-working space for them, or house cleaning services. Tons of great gifts that you can send online, but we forget to do that. And appreciation on any team, when we don't show appreciation, you can decrease morale. So it's one of those situations where if you don't do something, you can actually have a negative effect on your team. And I think a lot of managers sometimes forget to say thank you for really great work.
That's great. That is some good advice there. Are there any particular jobs that remote working works good for, any that it doesn't work good for? Probably more importantly, the ones that it doesn't really work so well for. Maybe manufacturing, factory work, but aside from that.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, if you're building something together, you physically need to be there. Retail stores, you need to physically be there. Nurses physically need to be there. Doctors.
But you don't want your surgeon working remotely, yeah.
Exactly. Although they have, they've had remote surgery they've had virtual surgery for a while now, or even doctors being.
How do you do virtual surgery? I don't get it.
Well, I think you can control the device from a different place, right?
Okay. I know a heart surgeon that does that with other surgeons. So he's almost like a consultant, but he does remote into the heart surgeries, and he can override if something's going on.
I feel like if they were about to put me under for surgery and I was like, where's the doctor? And they pointed at a robot, I would freak out and be say, no, I really want a human here standing over me.
Well, in fact, they have had telemedicine since the Vietnam War, and the reason why it doesn't work is because there is that level of care that you don't feel through the robot. So, right, telepresence was sort of invented for the medical industry, but people, when they are seeing a doctor, you you need to feel a certain amount of empathy and care from somebody. And what they're finding with the robots is it's creepy if you don't know the person that's in the robot. But if you do know them and you're familiar with them, then it's a lot easier to get used to it. But you know, if you have a doctor that you haven't seen and you're there, all of a sudden they're beaming in, it just doesn't work.
So you'd mentioned that I think most remote workers are part-time remote. They work in the office part-time and remotely part-time. Is that typically more mostly in the office and some at home, or is it mostly at home, some in the office? How does that usually work?
I think it's mostly in the office with a couple of days at home. I think most people like to be around their colleagues, and they really like that sort of the hustle of the office, and they're only productive when they're at the office. Then home is home. So they don't want to necessarily work from home. They want that work-life separation. That seems to be the majority of people. They just want a little freedom in their schedule.
But they also want to be able to not commute every once in a while and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Or, you know, the plumber who comes for between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be able to work at home. And what I tell businesses that are hesitant, which is regardless of if you allow flexibility or not, you should have the systems and processes in place to be able to work remotely in case something happens, because something always happens. And if, you know, if the person can't get into the office for any reason at all, right, work shouldn't have to stop. So you can strengthen your business, make it less vulnerable by becoming, they call it, remote first. So, you know, all the files are online, everything that you need can be accessed from anywhere. And you're productive no matter what happens. It can only be better for you.
Yeah, with everything being in the cloud nowadays, it's just the technology's got to make it that much easier.
Oh yeah, there's almost no excuse anymore. Like, why would you make it so that somebody had to be in this one particular location just in order to get their work done? It's almost, right. I mean, it's starting to sound old fashioned.
They can either take the day off because the cable guy is coming sometime that week, or they can, just work remotely to cover that time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Anything else? We're getting close to the end here. Anything else you really want to go over? Anything that we've missed when it comes to remote workers? I'm trying to specifically mention marketing and marketers, but this is kind of a general subject. It covers marketers, of course. But anything particular that you want to go over we haven't hit on yet?
One last thing is, I would say if you're a manager and you have remote workers, don't hesitate to get in the mud with your team and to find out what is it that they're actually struggling with. Because I really believe as a manager or as a leader of a team, your job is not to tell people exactly what tasks that they should do. Your job is to set the goal, set the strategy, and then get out of the way and let people take you there. But in order to do that, it's also
measure them so that you can manage them well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you want to have measurable targets. I mean, every business wants to have, you know, we have our OKRs, our KPIs, you know, every business wants to have measurable targets. No reason why you shouldn't have measurable targets for the remote workers. But make sure to get in the mud. My tip is always make sure you're understanding what it is exactly they're struggling with. And then your job is to remove those impediments.
Would you suggest that managers also work remotely some?
Oh yeah. I mean, I would say if you're doing this, everybody should be experimenting with small steps. So managers should definitely try it out. You know, I never say like, okay, everybody should just for the next 2 weeks, go wherever you want to go. And we're going to try this remote working thing. I would never say that would be a good experiment. I would almost say, everybody try calling in from your office onto Zoom and let's see what it's like to all be on a video conference together. You know, and if something goes wrong, you're still at the office and you can still meet if you need to.
Incremental steps, right?
Yes. Small steps without explosions that are too big.
I feel like if you tell the managers that are skeptical and buying into remote working, hey, why don't you stay home on Friday to test this out? They might suddenly be a little more interested.
Yeah, I mean, they're people too, right?
Like, oh, wait, I can stay home. Oh, now I see how this works. Now I'm not, now that I'm part of it and it's not just me worried about losing productivity, I can see how it actually works. And then they get to see kind of what the pitfalls and how everything works with it too. That's great.
Exactly. That's great. Yeah. Start with small incremental steps, safe to fail.
Excellent. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Lisette. Let me see. We've got, I want to mention some things about you here. You've got your book, collaborationsuperpowers.com/book. You can find that. And can you remind me, what's the name of the book again?
It's called Work Together Anywhere.
Work Together Anywhere. Fantastic. Online workshops on your site as well. We'll have those links on the show notes. You also have a podcast on this specific subject. That's the Collaboration Superpowers podcast, I believe. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
Fantastic. So anybody who wants to know more about remote working, you can tune into that. And then again, show notes will have all this stuff as well as contact information for Lisette. Anybody wants to reach out to her. You do trainings. Can you give us kind of a brief overview of what you do when it comes to services?
Yeah. So the majority of the services that I offer is the Work Together Anywhere workshop. So that, you know, takes us to, if you're going to do it online, which I recommend, it's 4 online sessions of about an hour and a half each. And we go through all the basics. You know, how do you simulate the office online? How do you create a team agreement, feedback and appreciation, and running great online meetings. And then also a lot of companies, they don't have team agreements in place. So I also get hired to help people create team agreements for their company. So I'll take the team through that process of doing it. And then I am a speaker. So the other part of my income comes from actually going out and giving presentations about remote work.
Fantastic. All right. Well, you can find more information on Lisette on the show notes at ifyoumarket.com. So on behalf of Carla Jo Helms and the IFE Market team and Lisette Sutherland of Collaboration Superpower, thank you for listening. And spread the word. If you market the shit out of it, they will come.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you online.
All right. Thanks, Lisette.